Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Michael Keegan, and our guest today is Dr. Bobby Braun, Chief Technologist at NASA. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Randy Simpson. Bobby, the U.S. has made great progress throughout its history by innovating solutions to the enormously difficult challenges that it has encountered. What are some of the strategically defined grand challenges that you could potentially be addressed by your program?
So one of the things that we've done is, starting with NASA's strategic plan, we've been defining this set of grand challenges, and we're going to be using these grand challenges to organize this space technology program. In human exploration, perhaps the grandest challenge of them all, at least in my lifetime, will be to send humans to the surface of Mars. This is actually something that I know a little bit about. I've been working on it for quite a few years, and let me tell you, it's tough. Frankly, we can't do it today with existing technology. There are a number of technological breakthroughs that are needed to enable us to one day, this is not something we're going to do soon, but to one day have humans walk across the surface of Mars. As I mentioned earlier, I've been involved in the design of some of the robotic missions that have gone to Mars, and I'll tell you, that is a great challenge in itself. But it's one thing to land, say, a spacecraft the size of this table on the surface of Mars, and it's quite another thing to land a two-story house right next to perhaps another two-story house that was landed autonomously and that has all the fuel and supplies that the humans might need for their long stay on the Mars surface. The mass requirements, or the weight requirements of such a mission, are also tremendous. It makes the amazing work that we've done on the International Space Station pale in comparison. For just one human mission to Mars, we need much more mass in low Earth orbit to start that mission than we actually have today with the International Space Station. And it's taken us a decade to fully assemble the International Space Station. If I can branch out a little bit, you know, if you look at the Science Mission Directorate, perhaps one of the grandest challenges there is the question, you know, are we alone? This is something that I actually think about a lot when I'm on the farm, away from the city. If you look up at the night sky and you see all those stars, you can't help but wonder, you know, how many planets are out there around those millions of stars that you can see, and how many of those planets could be Earth-like, and of those Earth-like planets, how many could be inhabited. I believe that through technology investments, we will develop robotic missions that will go out through our solar system and will be able to one day tell us whether there has ever been life on other planets within our solar system. I also believe that through investments in observatory investments, we will focus in on questions of Earth-like planets, and even beyond that, we'll focus in on questions of, you know, are there inhabitants on some of those Earth-like planets? Without technological investments, these kinds of things are frankly just not in the cards.
Can you tell us more about NASA's Centennial Challenges program? Sure. What are the benefits of the program? How has it triggered an outpouring of creative solutions? To what extent is it a model for government-sponsored prizes? And what's next?
Well, Centennial Challenges is a fantastic program. I should point out it's not new. It's been a part of NASA for a few years. It's been run through the innovative partnership elements of NASA. In Centennial Challenges, what NASA has done is they've laid out a prize competition. They lay out a grand challenge for the public to go after. And these challenges are related to NASA's mission. So, for instance, there was an astronaut glove challenge. And there have been several other challenges that also relate to NASA's mission. When we put out such a challenge, all kinds of people respond. It's amazing to me the diversity of the teams. We've had father-son teams that have done quite well in these competitions. We've had university student teams, and we've had small businesses from around the country respond and do quite well and actually win some of these competitions, win some of the prize money associated. Now, NASA doesn't pay any of these teams. They all do it on their own expense, their own nickel, and they enter the competition, and only when they meet the milestone do they get a payment. So it's really the spirit of American competition, the spirit of American innovation that drives these folks. And what they're doing when they enter one of these centennial challenges is very similar to what we do at NASA. So another thing that we're doing is we're growing the workforce. We're growing the knowledge base within the American public of how challenging space exploration and advanced aeronautics missions can be. Because what they're doing on these centennial challenge teams is a very good Earth-based analogy for what we're doing in space. NASA's been doing this for a few years. The rest of the government seems to be interested now. And just recently, the White House has issued a policy paper stating that more of the government should get involved in these prize type of programs. And they actually cited NASA and the Centennial Challenges program as a model for what the rest of the government could be doing.
You mentioned the SBIR program. Although small businesses are a frequent source of technological innovation, many lack the necessary funding to support their research. Would you tell us more about the Small Business Innovative Research Program, and how does it assist small businesses to develop commercially viable technologies working with your agency?
The Small Business Innovation Research Program and its counterpart, STTR program, sorry about the acronym, are focused on small businesses in this country and how they, for NASA, on how they can contribute to the space program. Of course, this program is not a NASA program. This is a government-wide program. Within NASA, SBIR is moved into my new organization. It's moved into the Office of the Chief Technologist. So we've integrated the SBIR, STTR program with all the other technology programs that we have. We've done this for a couple of reasons. One, previously the SBIR program was, like I said, a phase one, kind of phase two program. So you could win, if a small business won an SBIR, they could do some concept work. They could build kind of a laboratory-based experiment, maybe a prototype system, but they couldn't go any further. It was very difficult, at least, for them to get much further. Because we have these other technology programs, if we integrate the SBIR into my office, there's an infusion path for the small business technologies to keep going into the NASA pipeline and actually make it into some of NASA's missions of the future. Now, this program, the SBIR STTR program, is very important to me. It's important to me for a number of reasons. I'm a big believer in small business and in the innovations that they make consistently to our nation's economy. But secondly, in FY11, in the fiscal year 2011, this program is a very large piece of my overall budget. It's probably approaching a third of the budget. It's the biggest program that we have in fiscal year 2011. So we are looking to make sure that we utilize the program effectively. We are going to make some small changes in the way the program's been managed, and these changes are being put in place to make sure we get that there is a path for us to infuse these innovations and these technologies into NASA's missions.
Well, Bobby, you've mentioned that there's a lot of exciting things happening. I was wondering, how do you ensure that technology is transferred to make it commercially viable?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we need to make it commercially viable, and we also need to make sure it's transferred and infused into NASA's missions, into the missions of the government. One of the challenges in infusing new technologies into missions in the past has been that there has not been a full spectrum of these technology programs. There's been maybe a system study program, and then there's been no game-changing piece to pick it up, right? Or there was a game-changing piece, but no cross-cutting piece to pick it up and take it and demonstrate it in flight. And so the fact that we have in the fiscal year 2011 plan, the fact that we have this full suite of technology programs to take an innovative idea all the way from concept through ground-based and lab testing and into flight, I think will greatly help us with the infusion of these ideas into new missions. The second point there is that we are looking for partnerships in the development of these technologies, particularly for the more expensive flight demonstration phase. We're looking for the sponsors or the customers that want to actually use those technologies in flight to help us sponsor that demonstration. And so we're looking at the NASA mission directorates, we're looking at commercial industry, and we're looking at other government agencies and how we can partner with them to more effectively perform that demonstration. And naturally, by doing that, we're involving them in the process early on. We're not working on our technology kind of in our sandbox, and when it's all said and done, just kind of throwing it over the wall and hoping that there's someone there to pick it up. We're actually working hand in hand with the folks that have these operational missions and letting them know about the technologies, letting them actually affect our selection process. They'll be involved in our selections and letting them be involved in steering our programs along with us to help that infusion path.
Bobby, I'd like to switch gears a little bit. What is commercial space? And would you tell us why a robust and competitive commercial space sector is critical to your efforts?
Yeah, there are many definitions of commercial space. Let me just say that up front. I view commercial space as being an entity that is not dependent on the government, right? I view it as it's a market that one fosters, a market of its own. So for instance, space tourism is something that we read about in the newspapers often today. Space tourism may become its own market. The use of space-based resources is another potential commercial market out there. Satellite servicing is another potential kind of market. As satellites get more and more expensive and more complex, if you had a minor failure in such a satellite, it may one day, not today, but it may one day be cheaper to just repair that one little part than to replace the entire satellite, particularly for our very large government satellites and in the telecommunications industry. Speaking of telecommunications, that is a commercial market, right? There are many more telecommunications satellites in operation today that are built commercially, flown commercially, and utilized commercially than there are government systems. This is a market that we've actually already turned over to the commercial sector. So these other markets are things that I believe will emerge in time. And the government's role there, I think, is to foster those markets, because with the emergence of those markets comes economic progress, frankly. With the emergence of these markets comes technology-oriented jobs that tend to be higher-paying jobs. And with the emergence of these markets comes a global economic competitiveness advantage for our nation. So I think it's in our nation's best interest to foster these markets. And that's one of the things that we will be trying to do through the Space Technology Program.
Great. You've touched on this before in an earlier segment, but with such a new and critical mission, what are you doing to cultivate a risk-tolerant environment that fosters innovation?
Yeah, well, that is incredibly important to what we're doing. What does acceptable risk mean to a technology development program? And this is part of the cultural challenge that I think that I have and that we're working on. The way I view it is we need to have more of a tiered risk acceptance approach to NASA. Certainly in our human spaceflight programs, we need to take every precaution and we need to prioritize safety. Sending humans into space is always going to be risky and is always going to be hard. I don't want to underestimate that. And so I think, you know, the failure is not an option approach to human spaceflight probably makes sense. As you go from that to our very large government spacecraft, where we invest a large portion of our national treasure in making those spacecraft, developing and operating those spacecraft, whether we're talking about NASA or other government agencies, I think we probably don't want to take a lot of risk on a multi-billion dollar scale single launch mission as well. But as you go to smaller missions, particularly at NASA, we have the Discovery line, we have the Scout series of missions. And as you move into technology development, we certainly need to be able to take more risk. If we don't take risk in our technology development program, well, we certainly won't be developing game changers. We won't be fulfilling grand challenges. The only way I know to innovate is to take risk. the only way I know to make progress towards a grand challenge or to develop a disruptive or game-changing technology is to take some risk. And with risk comes a higher probability of failure. So one of the things that we're doing in the Space Technology Program is we're talking about this. We're saying straight up that we are going to fail. We're not going to fail with every investment. We have a broad portfolio of investments. What's important is that when we fail forward. We learn from that experience. And when we succeed in a manner that the future is not just a straight line. There's not just a roadmap up on the wall somewhere where we go from step one to step two to step three to step four. A disruptive technology needs to come in there, and perhaps there's a step function in that roadmap. Maybe we go from step one to step four because of this disruptive technology, and we skip a couple steps along the way. That's the model that we're shooting for, and that will only occur if we take some risk in this program.
What does the future hold for research and development at NASA? We will ask its chief technologist, Dr. Bobby Braun, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.